First term, everybody was fighting me. In this term, everybody wants to be my friend.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Welcome to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today. Glad you are with us. We've got about 8 hours of material today, but I promise you we will try to wrap this up in three. And of course, we've got the ever-present Sue Thomas in. Good to see you, Sue.
Good to see you.
Uh-oh. Is your microphone on there?
Nope.
No, it's not on. There you go.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. So, sorry you got to sit and have to listen to me for 3 hours.
Oh, no, but, that's good.
But there is a lot to jump into here. But I just want to ask you a question, Sue, before we dive into all this stuff. Last night at the Muni, I saw Come From Away.
And what'd you think?
And I thought it was phenomenal.
Okay. Isn't it Canadian somehow?
It is. And really, and this is my question for you, because the story revolves around 9/11. And this small town of Gander, Newfoundland, population 9,000, had 7,000 people land at an airport. They had 7,000 people suddenly land when there was an all-stop, ground stop. Every plane has to come down. So suddenly the town went from 9,000 to 16,000 in an hour when all these planes just landed. And they had to take care of them for 5 days.
That's nuts. It's something you would never think about.
Right. But everybody has a 9/11 story. Anything
theirs.
In particular about you? I mean, any interesting thing about 9/11?
I was at Channel 4 on the morning show then. And Corey Barron was the weather guy. And we had the big monitor over in the weather center. And Corey and I were there. It was just between reports. And we saw footage of the first plane that hit. Mm. And all of us in there, Mark Cox was there. He was on the morning show. And we were talking about it. And we were trying to process it. We're thinking, well, it must have been an accident. You know, somebody just ran into it on accident. So, you know, how did a plane get in there? And, you know, you heard the analysts talking about it on CBS, and they couldn't quite figure it out. And then the second one hit.
Yes.
And the world changed. So yeah, I was in the studio at Channel 4 trying to process what happened, doing a morning show.
Right there when the action was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Hall of Famer Fred Bottomer. Good to see you, Fred.
Hey, Brad.
You've got, let's see, we're going to pull your mic up here. You've got an interesting 9/11 story.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was, you know, at the time of the morning, I was getting both of my sons ready for, you know, preschool or kindergarten. And, you know, my wife right away said, don't let them watch TV. So obviously I didn't. So I drove them. I went to the preschool. And when I got to the preschool, all the kids and the nuns were standing around praying.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, I knew what was going on. And it was funny. Noah goes to that preschool that morning, and today he's working at the Pentagon in the exact location where the plane came down.
Oh, that's nuts.
So
Fred,
he's, you know, right next to the chapel that they built to honor everyone who died in the Pentagon.
Wow.
He's in one of the offices near the site where the plane went down at the Pentagon.
Mm.
So that's pretty crazy.
That is very crazy. I related a lot to seeing Come From Away last night at the Muni because I was in Canada. I was stuck in Canada on 9/11.
Oh, wow.
My wife and I had just finished. In fact, we were sailing into Vancouver for cruising the Inside Passage. It was the last, literally, we were going to get off the ship in Vancouver. We'd been up there for 8 days. We're sailing into Vancouver when the planes hit the tower. We were literally 10 minutes from docking when the planes hit the tower. And so we were stuck in Canada for a period of about an extra 5 days before we could come home. And I tell this story because, to me, it exemplifies the difference between men and women. Because my wife's first reaction to being trapped in Canada and not being able to come home, her first reaction was, oh, my goodness, our baby daughters are at home. We have to get to them because they need me. Mm. My first reaction was, if I'm stuck on the ship, that means they're going to feed me free shrimp and steak for an extra 5 days.
Wow.
Oh, no, I'm joking, Sue.
No, I know that you are. But, I'm just saying, I mean, it's just bizarre that you would be stranded somewhere. A friend of mine was stranded in Europe on his honeymoon.
Oh.
And they said, you've got to find hotels. You've got to stay for an extra 5 days or whatever. So people were scrambling trying to find these places.
Right.
You know, it was just a worldwide reverberation.
It was. And so we were stuck in Canada. We eventually got to Seattle after another couple of days. We got to fly home. And on the flight home, when we flew in to Lambert and landed, there was universal applause on the aircraft.
Oh, gosh.
Because everybody on that plane had been trapped in Canada, just like my wife and I were trapped in Canada. So seeing a come from away reminded me of that. But I also want to get to this because, as you know, the so-called Big Beautiful Bill got passed today. Here's what Mike Johnson said on the floor of the House right before the vote, number 19.
I'm going to just say this as plainly as I can. This is a simple truth. If you're for a secure border, safer communities, and a strong military, this bill is for you. If you're for common sense fiscal responsibility and reducing the deficit, this bill is for you. If you're for fair and lower taxes, bigger paychecks, affordable gas and groceries, and restoring dignity to hard work, this is the bill for you.
Now, what's interesting about this, and we're going to get to AOC's response to the Big Beautiful Bill in just a moment, but you know, in part of this bill involves the elimination of taxation on tips, and also the elimination of taxation on overtime hours.
Mm.
And this is going to help so many middle and lower class Americans to have this elimination of taxation, which, again, the point of wage earners, even high wage earners, is we should get to keep more of what we make. Why are you forcibly extracting too much money from our wallets when we're making this money? Well, this is actually going to apply even to middle-class Americans, to lower wage-earning Americans. It's going to apply to everyone. And yet, even though hardworking Americans are going to be benefiting from this particular tax bill, here's what AOC had to say about the passage of the Big Beautiful Bill.
If you're at home and you're living off tips, you do the math. Is that worth it to you? Losing all your health care, not able to feed your babies, not being able to put a diaper on their bottom in exchange for what? This bill is a deal with the devil.
Now, let's break down what she said for a second. Think about what she just said. You're going to lose your health care. There's nothing in this bill that even deals with health care.
What is she talking about?
Nothing whatsoever. Well, she's practicing her speeches for running for president.
Oh, yeah.
But nothing in this bill deals with health care. And yet she says, what does having, if you're working primarily for taxes, this is what she said, or primarily for tips, rather, what is this bill going to do for you? How is it going to help feed your babies? Well, because you're going to make more money. That's how it's going to feed your babies. The tax income that you previously had that was taxed at a confiscatorily high rate, now it's going to be tax-free. That's going to help you feed your babies. You want to talk about how, oh, this is not going to help you put diapers on your baby's bottom? Yes, it is, because diapers cost money, and when you make more money, you can buy more diapers. So to me, her entire position is not based on logic, not based on finances, not based on economics, but based on emotion. Hey, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk to a great friend of mine, attorney John Davis. He's a criminal defense attorney. We're going to break down the Brian Koberger, because I have a lot of questions, and I want to get into the details about his plea bargain. So make sure you stick around. Brad Young sitting in today for Mark Reardon. We'll be back right after this on 97.1. FM Talk. Back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today for Mark. And everyone's heard about this Brian Koberger situation, also about the P. Diddy results of that jury trial that we got yesterday. So I want to reach out to a great friend of mine, John Davis, former federal prosecutor, current criminal defense attorney with Kessler Williams. JD, good to talk to you, buddy.
Brad, how you been?
Well, I've been good. Also, I was going to say that the guy whose hair has its own zip code, John Davis.
I thought I told you not to mention that. But yeah, anyway.
You did. But out of jealousy, I've got to mention it. But
it's been a heck of a week in the criminal justice system around America, hasn't it?
It really, really has. And that's why I wanted to reach out to you, because you know this stuff so much better than I do. I don't practice criminal defense law. So I wanted to reach out to you because I've got questions on both of these. Let's start with Brian Koberger, because he pled guilty this week to four counts of first-degree premeditated murder. There was also a burglary charge, but I don't think that mattered. And and so it shocked a lot of people that he would do this. But here's one of my theories, and this is what I wanted to reach out to you on, because you are a criminal defense attorney, and everyone has this idea that oftentimes DNA evidence, because we see it on TV shows, which couldn't be further from the truth, by the way. All right. If we're analyzing our legal system based upon law and order, we're going to get it all screwed up. But here's the thing with the DNA evidence. This is one of my big questions. The DNA evidence that was obtained, and they wanted to, the federal officials wanted to track Koberger's DNA to try to get a list of relatives, because they didn't know who he was. They just had some random DNA that was on the sheath knife, and on the sheath, rather, of the knife. And so they wanted to find some family members. So they ran it through some commercial DNA like 23andMe and other companies that analyze your DNA. They tried to run it through this DNA to find relatives of whom they suspected was the killer. But they did it as a regular citizen, not as a police agency. Did I get those facts right, John?
You did. It's called investigative genetic genealogy.
There you go. So in this instance, though, is there a problem maybe with the chain of custody when you're doing this as a regular citizen? And from your perspective as a criminal defense attorney, if this case would have gone to trial, could Koberger's defense team attack that DNA evidence based on this idea that they ran it as a regular citizen instead of pursuing it as an investigation organization?
It's an interesting question and an interesting concept overall. So if they were to run it as law enforcement, they would need a search warrant under the Fourth Amendment. If they run it as a private citizen, they don't, because the Constitution doesn't apply to private citizens. It applies to the government. But circumventing the fact that it's an FBI agent running it as a private citizen is troublesome. Excuse me. Specifically, they ran it through, you mentioned 23andMe, but it was MyHeritage and GED Match were the databases that they ran it through. So the defense did what they should have done pre-trial and filed a motion to suppress. And that is, hey, you have evidence that we think you obtained unconstitutionally. And therefore, under ages and ages of case law, it can't be used at trial because you gained it improperly. The judge denied it.
Right. So that evidence was going to come in, but at a trial, could that have been the basis to discredit the DNA evidence? Because otherwise, if you take away this DNA evidence from Brian Koberger, I know there was mountains of circumstantial evidence, cell phone pings, video of a white car that matched his description driving away from the scene of the crime. But when you boil it all down, in the absence of the DNA evidence, that was the only evidence that they had that actually put Koberger in the room where the murders happened, right?
I agree. But in trial, the pretrial motion to suppress has already been denied. So it's coming in. Now, can you discredit the FBI agent or agents that get on the stand and say, isn't it true you did it this way? Isn't it true you did it that way? Yes, 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 yes. But the thing has been litigated, and it's coming in. The judge ruled that the DNA left on the sheath of the knife was abandoned. And in criminal law, the fact of the matter is, if you throw something away, you're giving up any legitimate expectation of privacy in whatever anybody finds from it. There's famous cases where
I know these.
Yeah, you put your garbage out at the end of the driveway on Thursday night because the garbage man's coming early Friday morning. The police can come and dump it in the back of their truck and go through your garbage because you're sending a signal to the world, I don't have any expectation of privacy in this garbage, or you're running down an alley and the police are chasing you and throw a wallet or you throw a baggie of cocaine or whatever the case may be, you've abandoned it. And that's what the judge ruled in this case, was that there was, he relied on the abandonment doctrine and then went a step further and said, did the defendant have a legitimate expectation of privacy on any DNA he left behind? And the ruling was no, again, relying on the abandonment doctrine.
Right. We're talking to a criminal defense attorney, John Davis, former federal prosecutor, now a criminal defense attorney with Kessler Williams right here in St. Louis. And John, you have been talking from your criminal defense hat. Switch over to your prosecution hat for just a moment. What would be, if you can do that, what would be the incentive for the prosecution when there's a lot of evidence, not only a lot of circumstantial evidence, but they can actually put him in the room? What is the motivation, or why would the prosecution be motivated to agree to a plea deal when they had such an enormous amount of overwhelming evidence?
Brad, that's the million-dollar question, and I don't know the answer to it. And if I was a relative of one of those victims, and they are, I would be incredibly upset. That plea agreement that took death off the table, and I know one of the victims' fathers is saying, you know, this is just adult daycare when he goes to prison. I mean, prison is prison, but we're in a state prison in Idaho. I don't know what the security is there, but I can't answer that question. This would have been a prosecutor's dream to try this case to its finality, which would have been the death penalty.
Well, I could talk about this for another 30 minutes, but I know I want to get to P. Diddy before our segment's over. So, John, I want to talk about Combs for just a moment. And by the way, there's absolutely no truth, John, to the rumor that Sean P. Diddy Combs is now going to become the spokesman for Subway since they don't have Jared anymore. That's a rumor. Listen, that's a false rumor. So I don't want you to repeat that. But
that's fake news. I don't know that.
Totally fake news. I want to make sure that nobody thinks that's true. It's fake. So when it comes to P. Diddy, though, here's the question that I have. Because when you're looking at the testimony from Cassie, the former girlfriend, yeah, and then the Jane Doe talking about how they were forced into sex, how they were literally required by P. Diddy because he had such control over them. Isn't it oftentimes the case with celebrities that juries have trouble distinguishing between consensual and non-consensual sex?
Yeah, I think that's the case. And, you know, I'll tell you, Brad, what I tell everyone, you know, on famous cases like this or OJ or something, and someone calls me or talks to me and says, hey, you're a lawyer, what do you think about this verdict? And I have to say, honestly, I can't really comment on it because I wasn't in the jury. All I hear is what I see on the news.
Right. Good point.
But the fact of the matter is, he's charged in count one with a RICO offense. And that is a really difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Well, A, it's a difficult statute to understand. It's a difficult statute to prove. It was designed in 1970 by Congress to take down organized crimes, mainly in New York, the Gambino family and those kinds of folks. But it's been used for motorcycle gangs and political conspiracies and things like that. But it is really, really, I'm defending a RICO case right now in the District of Kansas. And our discovery is honestly millions and millions of pages.
Ugh. Well, and we're going to have to go here in a second, John, but my feeling is that the prosecutors brought the RICO charge just so they could introduce other types of evidence to try to discredit P. Diddy without ever having to really prove RICO. But listen, hey, before I let you go, though, you're with Kessler Williams. If people want to reach out to you to talk about criminal defense issues, how can they reach you?
The best way is my cell phone, 314-696 9229.
John Davis, a great friend from law school. Thanks for all your help today and joining us on 97.1 FM Talk.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
Great to talk to you, sir. Hey, we've got to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk to George Rosenthal, one of the owners of ThrottleNet, about how can you keep electronically safe over the 4th of July weekend. George Rosenthal, next on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in today. I've been reading a lot of the comments. If you want to actually watch the show, not that anybody wants to see me. Trust me, you don't want to see me. But people may want to see Sue Thomas or see how we put the show together. You could go to YouTube, put in Mark Reardon Show, and you'll go right there. Some of the comments, one person said, Brad Young's volume is low. And I wrote him back and I said, no one in my entire life has ever said Brad Young's volume is low. Those words have never been spoken before. So certainly my wife and kids are always saying, Dad, you're too loud. So it never been said before. Anyway, I wanted to make time to work in George Rosenthal today because, number one, talking to George is fantastic. I learn something every time I talk to George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet. George, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
And you're on a boat right now in Lake of the Ozarks. That's how much you care about being a part of the show. You're joining us from a boat.
I am live on a mile marker 3 on the north side, sitting in a cove, double anchored out. The kids are swimming, and the dog's in the water with them.
Oh, that's the way we need to be doing it. I'm here working. You're on a boat.
I love you. I love you guys. I would never, ever say no to you guys, ever.
Well, thank you, George. And, of course, everybody knows George. He's one of the co-owners of ThrottleNet. And, George, for a lot of folks who go on vacation, maybe in airports, what kind of – are there any security risks when you go to the airport, security risks for your phone, Wi-Fi hotspots, plugging your phone in? What are some of the risks?
Oh, yeah. In fact, something that's fascinating, for about $600-$700 on the dark web, you can get a USB cable that looks exactly like any other USB cable you'd have for your phone. But the end that actually plugs into your phone, looks no different. It's not any thicker, but it has a little bitty chip in it that can do key logging, and then it saves that. So what they'll do is they'll plug this cord into the wall and walk away at the airport, and they'll just wait. And somebody will sit down, they'll see a cord sitting there, plug their phone in, and immediately now, I am now what's called port jacking. I'm now immediately on your phone,
wow,
keylogging everything that you have on your phone. Then when you leave, a lot of times they'll leave the cable because they want to be nice for the next person. You come back and all that data is sitting on that cable. So you can, I would highly recommend a couple things. Get a USB cable that has data blocking.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a data blocker USB port. Do not attach to their Wi-Fi. I know everybody loves to use the airport's Wi-Fi. There are thousands of people on that Wi-Fi at the same time. Don't do that. Use your data and or hotspot, of course. The other thing is, if you need power, bring a power pack, you know, a little battery pack that's about the size of your hand. They're TSA approved. You can get a power pack. Do not plug that in. And do not do this, and don't ever get on your financial information in the airport.
Ugh.
Especially don't get on your financial information on the airplane, because now there's Wi-Fi on the airplane. So you have to take the same precautions on the airplane, because not everybody sitting next to you is a nice person. So I can get on that Southwest Airlines or Delta Airlines Wi-Fi, and I can start looking for anybody that's on my plane and start keylogging the same stuff.
Mm. And George, one of the things that I've been noticing, that when I go to the airport, because I follow your advice, okay? I'm tech savvy.
Yep.
I never join any Wi-Fi that I'm not 100% sure of. But if you go to the airport and you check what Wi-Fi hotspots or what Wi-Fi is available, a bad actor could be at the airport and setting up their own Wi-Fi network and call it Lambert Wi-Fi Free for All Guests. And it could be a hacker, couldn't it?
Absolutely. There's a little device. You don't even need this particular device, but if you go and get a Flipper Zero, just like Flipper the Dolphin, Flipper Zero, they're a couple $100. You can set up a complete Wi-Fi, anything you name it, anything you want, just like you said, and you can have it the exact same thing as Lambert, or and maybe you change a character to make it a little different. But then you invite people on, and I can start keylogging everything, and I can see everything that they're doing. So that's why I don't like going on public Wi-Fi, especially at the airport. Yeah, I know it, we always talk about like Starbucks or, you know, public Wi-Fi at a restaurant, but this is thousands and thousands of people at an airport all on the same network. So your odds of finding somebody that's logging onto their bank information or credit card information is very high. So if I'm a bad guy, that's a great place to go and steal information.
Target-rich environment. You know, in my at my house, I've got two Wi-Fi channels on my Wi-Fi. One I've called FBI surveillance team, and the other one I've called Department of Homeland Security. So the only reason that's I did it is because my neighbors, you know, if they're checking for Wi-Fi, they're going to go, "Well, what? The FBI surveillance team is in our neighborhood? What?" And of course, I'm just doing it to mess with them. But the point being is that if you're a bad actor, you can call your Wi-Fi anything you want, including something that sounds safe and innocuous, and then you can actually grab someone's data when they log into your Wi-Fi.
Yes, and one other thing that's crazy, you know the skimmers that are on, that bad people put on gas pumps or they put inside of a gas station, and when you put your credit card in, it'll steal your credit card information. They're called skimmers. They're doing the same thing now at USB ports and outlets. They mimic the outlet of the airport, and they'll go and just pop a skimmer on, let everybody plug in for the day, come back, pull the skimmer, and all that data is saved in that skimmer. That's why I don't like plugging into anything that's inside the airport at all. And if you need power, bring a power pack. If you need data, use your hotspot. I know it can be a little crazy if you got kiddos watching Netflix or something like that, but maybe up your data plan for that, just for that trip, and then you bring it back down to what you had when you come back. But it's worth doing that, because, and everybody says, "Oh, it'll never happen to me." It's happening constantly, thousands and thousands a day, and not just identity theft and all of the other bad things that happen, but taking all your money immediately while you're on vacation, scamming your credit cards and being able to use them while you're on vacation.
Yeah, I want to get to that. We're talking to George Rosenthal, one of the co-owners of ThrottleNet. Full disclosure, my law firm uses ThrottleNet. We love ThrottleNet. I'm not being paid to say that I love ThrottleNet, but I've got my whole law firm using ThrottleNet, and they're fabulous. And George, you mentioned credit cards. And one of the things that I've seen, and I don't know if this is anything that you've encountered or know much about, but RFID scamming, where people can remotely read credit card numbers. Is that a real thing?
Yes, it's absolutely a real thing. Again, I go back to that little device called the Flipper Zero. It's about the size of your palm. It fits in your pocket. I can walk by anybody nearby, and if your cards are in a wallet, as I'm walking by, it's reading all of those chips that are in your cards, immediately saving it to the Flipper Zero. I can then go online and start spending money or doing whatever I need to do. So that's why I carry a wallet that's got metal sides to it, and it blocks any type of RFID reader. So that nobody can just walk by me in a crowded place and steal all my information.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've actually looked at some RFID wallets on Amazon, and what I've done, and let me know if you think this is a good idea, before I bought mine, what I've done is I looked at the reviews, because just because some wallet manufacturer says it's RFID proof doesn't mean necessarily that it is. So I've gone through and I've read through the reviews where there's really smart guys like you who have actually tested it, and they'll say whether it is or is not RFID proof. Is that a good idea to read the reviews before you buy it?
Absolutely, because a lot of these things are copied over in China, and they're sold to anybody at very low prices, meaning they'll copy what's called an RFID protector, but it's really not doing anything. They'll lower the price to make it really compelling, and then all of a sudden you get this cheap knockoff, and it does nothing for you. And again, you know, there's going to be a lot of people downtown for 4th of July fireworks. You are standing shoulder to shoulder with total strangers that can do a lot of crazy things these days. It's not 1985 when you used to go down to the VP Fair. So when you go down there, make sure you have something that protects your credit cards, and, you know, make sure you're not having any type of guest Wi-Fi attached just because you're down. You're down out there on the grounds and you think you need Wi-Fi. Use your data on your phone and make sure you have your credit cards protected.
Very good. George Rosenthal, man, you may have saved someone's financial equity today because of what you told them. That's how important this is. You could have saved their financial resources just by being on our show today. And the lake, how's the weather at the lake today?
It's absolutely beautiful, and thank goodness the rain is gone. So, yay. everybody's done with the rain. It's very nice. The water's warm, and it's definitely busy. Let's put it that way.
Well, get back to hanging out with your family, George, and we will talk to you soon. George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet, great to talk to you, my friend.
Great to talk to you guys as well. Happy Independence Day, and I hope everyone has a safe one.
Fantastic. Talk to you soon, buddy.
Talk to you later.
So, Sue, there's really just no end to the way thieves, criminals, and bad guys are creating ways to steal your money.
Yeah, they're really creative. If we put that force to good, think what we could do.
Yeah, I had a ex-brother-in-law, my sister's ex-husband.
Oh, okay.
He was a crook. And I'm not going to mention his name. He was a crook. And I always thought, you are so smart.
Yeah, if you were to, yes.
And you spend so much time trying to figure out how to steal somebody's money, if you applied that to good, you'd make a fortune and you wouldn't have to be a bad guy.
Boy, that's the truth. That really is the truth. And we've had George on a lot lately because it just gets worse.
Right, but I don't think a lot of people understand this idea of the RFID reader with credit cards. And I've seen a demonstration. Mm-hmm. I saw a live demonstration one time where a guy was standing on an overpass.
Ooh.
And when the cars were driving below him, he was reading their credit cards.
Holy cow.
And he had a reader, and the credit card numbers were just popping up on his LCD screen.
Wow.
On his RFID reader.
That's scary.
And so, people have to take precautions. And especially when we're traveling this weekend or going downtown and enjoying the fireworks, it's just have common sense. But what I think is the beauty of what George told us is these are issues that a lot of folks may not have even been aware of. Everybody on the planet knows there are computer viruses and hackers out there for computers. But I don't think a lot of us realize that those same bad actors are going after our phones as well.
Oh, yeah. They're everywhere.
And going after our credit cards. Hey, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, I've got some, I want to go through some additional stuff here today. My stack of stuff is truly enormous. But one of the things I want to talk about is the cases that the Supreme Court is going to take up for the next term. Because there are some massive issues that the Supremes will be deciding in the next term, just as they did in the current term. Brad Young sitting in today for Mark Reardon. Stick around on 97.1 FM Talk. Just looking over some of the additional comments here on the YouTube channel. Brad Young sitting in for Mark Reardon today. If you want to watch the show and be a part of the text of the show, you can actually text in via YouTube. Just go to YouTube, put in Mark Reardon Show Live. You can be a part of it. And by the way, to me, that's what I love about talk radio. I'm not doing this because I have to. I'm doing this because I enjoy it. And one of the things that makes this different, you might be even listening to this on a podcast later on, but for those who are listening live, you can actually be a part of the show. During the show, I'm going to be reviewing and reading some more of these comments, and that interactive nature of talk radio is something that truly doesn't exist anywhere. If you're listening to a Joe Rogan podcast, you can't text Joe, ask him a question, be a part of the show. That's not something he can do. If you're watching Sean Hannity on Fox News, he's not going to take your questions. But here, it's truly interactive. And to me, that makes talk radio different than any other medium. Now, I'm a close watcher of the Supreme Court, and the court over the last 2 weeks has announced what cases they're going to take for next year. Keep in mind, unlike other courts, the Supreme Court can only take the cases they want to take. They can turn them down for any reason, no reason, doesn't matter. And yet they do announce what cases they will take. And one of the big topic cases that they're going to take next term is dealing with transgender sports participation here. Sue, that's really a big issue right now, isn't it?
It is. And of course, with that decision by the forced decision university by Penn,
yes,
having to deal with that and the swimming yesterday, it'll be interesting to hear what they say.
Right. And of course, that was an agreement with the Trump administration, mm-hmm, that the University of Pennsylvania agreed to strip titles from transgender athletes and to not allow transgender athletes moving forward. That was an agreed to settlement with the Trump administration. But what about universities that don't want to do that? And then you have states that try to ban it.
Is that part of the scope of the case that the Supremes are taking on?
Yes.
Okay.
Because what's happened is two different states that are involved with this. One of the states, I believe, is Idaho. And I believe that the other state involved is West Virginia. But students who were transgender and almost always, you know, we try to try to be politically correct sometimes and say, oh, just transgender students. It's always biological men competing against biological women.
Yes.
You never see any cases of biological women saying, I want to play football in the men's football program. Nobody ever says that.
There's a reason for that.
There is. And it doesn't mean that anyone's better or worse. Again, I've mentioned this before. My daughter rode Title IX scholarship, rode through KU. And I wouldn't have wanted her to have to compete against men rowing in a rope in a boat.
Doesn't make sense.
It just doesn't make sense. There's a reason we have an NBA and a WNBA.
Yes.
And it's not because of any reason other than it would be non-competitive to put them in the same organization.
Biological differences.
There are, and it's okay to say that. But here's what's interesting about this case that's going to be next term. I don't know if you remember, Sue, but a couple of weeks ago, the Supreme Court rendered a decision regarding what's called transgender-affirming care, which is a euphemism for hormonal suppressants, surgery, really genital mutilation. Tennessee banned that. The Supreme Court upheld a state's right to ban that type of care. Remember that?
I do.
And one of the things that I think a lot of people don't understand who don't watch the court is that the court doesn't just willy-nilly come up with these decisions. They apply different mechanisms for analysis. So, for example, in situations where a law infringes on what's called a fundamental right or a suspect classification like race or gender or religion, the court uses what's called strict scrutiny. What does that mean? That means that the government that's passed a law or passed an executive order, the government has to prove a compelling interest and that that law is narrowly tailored to achieve that interest. So that's what happened in this Tennessee case. The people were saying this law discriminates based upon gender and my right to choose my gender day in and day out. And so, therefore, strict scrutiny has to be applied. Supreme Court astutely said, no, this doesn't have to do with gender. It could be men trying to be women. It could be women trying to be men. It's not gender specific. It's age specific. And it's also medical procedures specific. And if you look at those things, the court doesn't have to apply strict scrutiny. They can apply what's called the rational basis test, which means the government only has to show that the law is rationally related to a legitimate government interest or purpose. And Tennessee showed they had a legitimate purpose, number one, in keeping children from being mutilated, because there's a reason we don't let kids vote, okay? They don't know anything. They're kids. And yet somebody who's six is going to tell you, when Johnny's going to tell you he's really Jane, he doesn't know. He's six. Okay?
Right.
We don't let them vote. We don't let them drink beer. And we don't let them fight in a war because they don't know what they're doing. And yet we're going to let the people have their genitals mutilated. Children have their genitals mutilated because of this? No, we're not. And so that's a legitimate state interest. I think the court is going to look at this the exact same way when it comes to the athlete situation.
I hope so.
Where they say, look, it's not a gender situation, even though we all know it's always going one way. It's always men trying to become women to compete against women. But in theory, the laws are gender neutral. If you have to play in sports that align with your birth gender.
Yeah, that's it.
And that means it's either men or women. It's not specific. It's not discriminatory. And if they look at that, number one, from a legal standpoint, there's a legitimate state interest.
Yeah.
We don't want men having an advantage over women. That's why we have Title IX.
Correct.
That's why we have Title IX.
Yep.
Is to make sure that women have an equal opportunity, and you're taking away the equal opportunity of women if you make them compete against men.
Yep.
It's just that I don't even understand how this is an issue, really.
I know.
It should be common sense.
It should be. I think to most people it is.
I do. You know what, Sue? You're right. Mm-hmm. I think to most people it is. But yet the mainstream media lives in this bubble where they're surrounded by progressives, and they forget that most of America does have common sense.
Mm-hmm.
We do, except sure. They just don't recognize it. So if the court applies that same standard, then I think that the court will uphold a state's rights, like what will happen, if it's not already, in Missouri, to make sure that if you're a biologically born man, you're not going to compete against biologically born women.
Wait, are you saying the states would then decide? The Supreme Court is not going to rule for U.S. It'll say you each state can decide for itself.
Right.
Okay.
Because California is never going to say
no. They're
going to allow all of the flakes, fruits, and the nuts to compete however they want. Okay? Because that's a cereal bowl state. So, but if Tennessee wants to decide,
then they're welcome.
They're welcome to do that. Okay, it's really mirrors the idea of abortion, is that this is not something the federal government should decide. So each state can decide. So if a blue state wants to be blue, if a red state wants to be red, God bless you. You can do whatever you like. And if you as a person don't like it, I got one word for you: move,
move.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there was a great comedian once that was addressing the starvation issues in Africa, and he said, we shouldn't be sending them food, we should be sending them luggage, okay, so they can move. Now, that's kind of not the same. Obviously, we want to help people who are starving. But the point is, if you don't like the state you're in, move. It's not all that difficult. But here's a couple of other cases that I think are interesting. Colorado, and I know we're coming up here on the clock here, but Colorado, we got another few seconds. I'll get into this next hour because we're already at 3:56. I'm going to break down some more cases in front of the Supreme Court later on in the show. But coming up at 4:04, we'll be talking to everybody's best friend, Dave Murray, next on 97.1 FM Talk.